Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you The Catholic Doctors, discussing medicine in light of church teaching. And now, The Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek.
Welcome to The Catholic Doctor Show, a product of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820. This is Dr. Will Turek. I am without my co-host, Dr. Michael Parker, who is busy up at his job in Cleveland, catching babies and tending to the sick and the dying. Hopefully not. Well, you never know. In any event, ably filling in for him is a Dr. Kimberly Hinkle, who is our moral theologian on staff here, and we welcome her to sit in his chair. Mike.
Yes, it's very comfortable.
It is. Tell Mike that.
I can get used to this.
I know. See, it's very comfortable. So, and I will also bring in Dr. Tony Caruso, who's on the phone from Chicago, our reproductive endocrinologist, who always helps us out once a month with our roundtable discussion. Tony, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Will. It's good to see you again, to talk to you, too. And Kimberly, it's good to talk to you, too. Yeah,
absolutely. I'm surrounded by Italians. what am I going to do? You know? So.
You know what? We'll just pray for the intersection of Abe Vigoda.
Abe was Hungarian or something. Vigoda's not an Italian. I don't know. That's just in the back of my mind. Is that true? He's a Hungarian Jew?
I don't know. He probably is.
Probably was. Anyway, God rest his soul. God rest his soul. You know, fish and Saltesio, right?
Yeah. Right.
All right. So we're digging into a topic today that is near and dear to Tony's heart. I know that for sure. And Kimberly has also had some experience with this as well. We're talking about the surrogacy industry, which obviously is something that is coming to the fore. Used to be really not a big thing at all. I mean, it was kind of a experimental thing, and it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger to the point that, you know, there's like 5,000 babies being born with this, I think, per annum, if I'm not mistaken. Right, Tony?
Yeah, and it's on the way up.
Yeah.
When I used to talk about the commodification of life, the last stage was how we could have, you know, homosexual marriage. Well, homosexual marriage exists because of the possibility of surrogacy.
Yeah, yeah. So, and since I'm the simpleton here, and I'm a family doctor, and I have to bring things down to their most elemental level, I always want to make it clear: surrogacy is when, and Tony, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but surrogacy is when one woman carries another woman's baby. Correct.
Correct.
Well, there are two forms of surrogacy.
Right.
So there's traditional surrogacy and then there's gestational surrogacy.
Okay.
So the traditional is that it's the woman who is carrying the child, it's her egg.
Right.
Correct.
So the now gestational surrogacy is where a couple will either use their own egg and sperm and do in vitro with a surrogate. With another woman.
Right.
So it could either be the woman's own egg or another. And I think really they're moving toward gestational surrogacy in an attempt to really not have that biological connection
with the surrogate.
I would say that the first standard surrogacy, which is what I would call the first, is really one, always has been rare. And two, I would say in 2016 it's non-existent.
Really? So it just, I mean, it, basically the latter is most commonly used throughout the country and the world.
Right.
Okay. So now, why is this coming to the fore right now, Tony? What's the big deal about surrogacy, and why is it so preeminent?
Well, again, go back to what I was saying when I first started. It's because of a larger part of it, but one, women are waiting later in life to have children, so they're using donor eggs to start with, and sometimes it's because they don't want to be pregnant. Sometimes, you know, don't want to have the changes of being pregnant. Sometimes it's because they've lost babies and don't believe they can carry a pregnancy. Sometimes, and then the third is because you have single people who want to have a child, single men that want to have a child but don't have a relationship, or you have a scenario where you have men who are married to each other, who don't have a woman to have a baby with, and they use that for that thing. And all those things are pretty much slowly on the rise.
Right.
And then throwing the other side of it is that surrogacy is not exactly something that's available in every state in the United States.
So, I mean, what are we talking about? A handful of states, 15, 20?
Maybe close to the 15, or yeah, I'd say 15 or 20. I haven't looked at the list lately. Kimberly, have you?
Yeah, actually, I have the list here. but there are, I mean, it looks like it's, to some degree, it's legal in most states. I think it's only maybe just the opposite. Like, it's maybe 15 states where there are prohibitions.
Yeah.
So, like, in Michigan, it's not allowed at all.
Oh.
Surrogacy. But in Ohio, it is.
Right, right.
So it's something, I mean, it's right in our backyard.
Well, but isn't it interesting that this is, one of the reasons why we got onto this subject was the whole European Parliament decision about surrogacy.
Right.
And now...
That's right. So what's so interesting is India just outlawed commercial surrogacy in November. So this is something, India was a hot spot for surrogacy. You're finding these very poor women,
right,
who were willing to undergo this for money. I mean, they needed the money. And so you see these women getting paid $2,000 to be pregnant and many times with multiples.
Right.
And putting their lives in danger. There have been women who have died over this.
Sure. It was the effect of what we would call reproductive tourism.
That's right.
Where they were... People are just going to find where they, because, you know, let's face it, surrogacy, especially in the United States, is not a cheap thing to do.
No.
And so you go someplace where the people need the money, and they're not willing, they're willing to do these things. And frankly, kudos to India for doing that, because it took them long enough to get it done. But the point is, because women were dying out there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. They, because they're not getting the greatest prenatal care. They have high risk pregnancies with high order multiples. And they just don't have the services out there to take care of these women.
But, I mean, isn't this just preying on women in another way?
Yeah, except, you know, one thing you have to always remember about surrogacy, no surrogate is ever forced into surrogacy.
Right.
They might be misguided, and they have a very altruistic air about them, but there's no one being forced into it. These women come into it willingly, at least at the beginning, to do this for these people.
Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, I think they're not really understanding the risks to themselves. They're not understanding the fact that so many times they do end up feeling very connected with these children.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of buying into that view that, okay, I'm just going to have this child, carry this child in my womb, and give it to this other person or this other couple, and it's not going to affect me, and it'll be a quick way to make some money.
Yeah.
And the women who are doing this are the ones who are economically
challenged.
I mean, there's no highly educated, well off woman who is going to submit herself to undergoing this and then giving up her child. There's nobody who will do that.
That's not always the case.
Oh, you think really?
Well,
is this in the terms of like sisters or things like that?
Yeah, it could. No. There are people that truly, really enjoy being pregnant that on their own, and they figure, okay, I like being pregnant, so I'll just do it for somebody else. They go like that's what I mean by that altruism. There is a very much a need base, because they make some serious cash in the United States doing this, but also it's this, oh, I want to help you because, oh, too bad, I feel for you, and I'll just do this for you. And yes, it plays out somewhat in like grandmothers having their grandchildren, or sisters having children for one another. But I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, in some other states, some states would have a higher affluent population. They're going to do this not necessarily for the money, although the money is always good. They do it to help people.
Hmm.
Well, I mean that, you know, I don't know how much that is actually happening. I know that, for example, military wives are being very much
targeted to
become surrogates here. Their husbands are overseas. They need some money. They want to stay home with their children.
Right.
They're looking for a way to be able to do that. And this seems like, well, kind of a win-win. They can make $25,000 or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think the money, you know, the money for all these things is what draws a lot of people to it. And that's the way it's marketed to them.
Right.
You know. I mean, you can. I'll pay you $7,000 for your egg, but if you carry the baby, I'll give you $25,000.
That's right.
You know. I mean, and that really does. Yes. And a person who is in a situation like a military wife, or who now is in between jobs or whatever, it is something that you can definitely. They can see. Well, I can do this, and they don't necessarily see it as having a big cost when they start.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? It's after they become pregnant that things begin in some women to change.
Well, and you know, how much in the way of, I mean, you've obviously dealt with this to some degree, Tony. Mm-hmm. How much right does the gestational mother have to this child? I mean, like, in reality.
Right?
I'm sorry?
Did you say right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the contractual obligations are what they are, and
right.
And they set things up. But, you know, I mean, what are the courts being willing to allow when they've already gone through 9 months of nurturing this child?
Well, it depends on where you are. But, you know, contract law is contract law. And these things, they're very rarely, well, they're becoming more common, but they very rarely get to court. The lawyer will talk to a lawyer who then will draft an agreement that the surrogate will sign. And you can imagine that it's a fairly complicated document because they have to talk about everything, about how it's going to happen. And remember, once she becomes pregnant, her insurance will not pay for the pregnancy because she's not pregnant on her own.
Right.
So now the person who is the other party has to actually pay for insurance for the mother to carry the child. And then the whole thing about how she does her prenatal care and what she would do when she goes into labor. So there's all kinds of details. It's actually a very complicated arrangement.
I imagine.
You know, but in most cases that it's not even thought about because they're all just into it. And, you know, in general, and I think I've talked about this in the show before, once an IVF cycle starts, it just kind of takes off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're thinking a whole lot about a lot of detail as we go to that point. And then at the end of the day, the woman is either pregnant or she's not.
Right.
And if she's pregnant, well, that then you deal with, then you're happy, and then you deal with whatever comes down line.
Yeah. I was thinking about this in terms, you know, as we're reading all these articles and everything like that, I was thinking about this in terms of, like, Hollywood, actresses and how they don't necessarily want to, you know, destroy their bodies through pregnancy. So,
exactly.
You know, and they let someone else carry their babies for them, you know, and it's almost like a class, it's slavery, right. You know, I mean, our class system.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. So Jennifer Law did a film called Breeders,
right.
And that's what she talks about, this subclass of women who are coming forward to be the breeders. And that's what is sort of the fear of developing. And I think it's something that we do need to be aware of. And, you know, I just as much as any other woman have experienced, any woman struggling with infertility, I've experienced that. I understand that great desire to have a child. And I think that's something we need to kind of get back to is, can we do anything, you know, have a child at what cost? And when we look at the options out there for a woman who's struggling with infertility, we've got adoption, which is, there's a lot of, it's hard to find a baby to adopt
if
you're looking. And there are children who need to be adopted, absolutely. But even that is it's a big process. And I see people say, well, you know what, this seems too difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll look at, you know, and it would be so nice to have a biologically related child. And so then they start going the IVF route. And then maybe the woman is unable to carry a child. So then the next they just start going down these different roads, like you mentioned, Tony. And so then the door to surrogacy opens and they think, well, hey, why not? I know that I personally, I've mentioned to several people just my struggles with infertility. When people say, oh, do you have children? Oh, no, but we're trying, we're hoping, we're praying. And I've had people offer to be surrogates for me.
Yeah.
Right.
I had a man who was doing some work at my home once offer his wife. He said, oh, well, my wife would be happy to be a surrogate for you. She just was a surrogate for a gay couple, and she had gave them a little girl. And And this was a great opportunity for me to really ask, how did you feel about that? I asked him, I said, so how did you feel about your wife being impregnated? Because this was a traditional surrogacy situation. It was her egg. And and she was inseminated with this gay man's sperm.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And she carried his child. And I said, how did you feel about your wife being inseminated and becoming pregnant by another man? And he's like, well, I didn't really look at it that way. I was like, how could you not look at it that way? He said, I hadn't really stopped to think about it. You know, his wife was making some good money, $25,000. She loved being pregnant. Mm-hmm. They weren't ready to have more children. And to think they had two sons, and this was her first daughter, and she just gave this daughter to these men. Mm-hmm. And I said, how did she do that? Did she not feel connected to that child? And he said, nope, she just, you know, she just understood that this was their child, and she just gave the child to them. And I mean, it seems so baffling to me.
Well, because you asked him, Kimberly.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Asking her would have been a different story entirely.
If you asked her, I think that answer would have been different.
Well, yeah, perhaps.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing that you were able to ask these candid questions in order to get. You know, I mean,
yeah, well, it was, you know, he was very open about it, and he just, I mean, it was amazing to me that he said he really hadn't stopped to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. You get involved, and I think it is the money to a large extent, but I mean, you know, once it gets started, it's just like a train that leaves the station. You don't stop it. It just goes, and next thing you know, you've had a baby, and next thing you know, the baby's been given away.
Right.
You know, that's a real concern. And you know, and I'm not saying it's not a real concern. It is. It truly is. I do think there are a lot of women who will say one thing, and they'll always put their chin forward and say, yes, I did it for them, and it was my fault. But really deep down, they're like, oh, my gosh, what did I do?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that leads to the problems. Of, you know, there have been sporadic cases across the country over the course of the years of people who are carrying children for other people who just basically try to renege on it.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Absolutely. You're listening to the Catholic Doctor Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. This is Dr. Will Turek, and we're talking with Dr. Kimberly Hinkle and Dr. Tony Caruso on the phone from Chicago, talking about surrogacy and how this is becoming very, very commonplace in our society and in our world, and how we're trying to navigate this on a moral level as practicing Catholics, as believing Catholics, and how this is really impacting all of our lives in some way, shape, or form. So Tony, my question is, now you were saying about the idea that insofar as the surrogacy goes, you know, she was very Kimberly was very fortunate to be able to ask these questions, but the asking the wife might have been a different story. Now,
right.
I'm assuming that you've asked those questions because you've been in the room when these sort of decisions have been made.
Oh God, no. I mean, no. I don't mean that. Like, no, I haven't. No, but honestly, we don't really ask those questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. I mean, we don't do good screening of these women beforehand, and we don't do postpartum visits with them afterwards either.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking reproductive endocrinology.
Right,
they just
right.
don't. So you would never really get that unless a problem came up.
Mm-hmm.
Then you wouldn't have that discussion.
Well,
and that would become between the mother of the children, the surrogate, and the people who she's with. Because remember, once she gets pregnant, they disappear.
So I think that's why Jennifer Law's film is so insightful, because she does interview several women who have been surrogates. And
mm-hmm.
one woman in particular, her first experience, she had a very positive experience with it. She said it was a good experience. But then she did it again, and it was very interesting because this next time, the child had an abnormality, had a defect.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who had hired her to have this child said, I want it aborted.
Right.
I want you
right.
to abort this child. And suddenly that protective mother in that
yeah.
original woman said, no, I'm not aborting this child. This
right.
is now my, this is right. my body. This is, and she suddenly felt connected to that child, and she felt like, I need to protect this baby.
Right.
This other woman is trying to kill this child. And so she said, you know what? I will find another family to adopt this child. And she found somebody else and she said, I'm not aborting this child. I'm going to keep this child. And then the woman decided and said, well, you know what? Actually, we do want the child. And so it went back and forth and back and forth. And she said, she cried in this movie and said, I don't know whatever happened to that child. And I was so worried because he was my baby. Like, yeah. She felt that bond. For the first one, she felt like, oh, everything's good. Everything was fine. But then after having a child that had problems and seeing how the attitude that this other family had towards that child, oh, the child's not going to be perfect. We don't want that child. Yeah. And she felt that need to protect the child. And suddenly she had a different bond. Yeah. She had a connection with child that she acknowledged and she really understood. And then she couldn't believe she had actually entered into that agreement.
I guess that's what I'm saying. As long as everything's going well, nobody really thinks about any of the possible fallout. But when something goes wrong, whether it's a genetic abnormality or a woman goes into preterm labor or she has a gestational diabetes or hypertension or something that may affect her world, she really starts to realize at that point that she's really not her own person.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's kind of run by the people who have kind of led the whole charge, whether it's the couple or whoever has contracted her.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, here's the dichotomy for me, okay? I used to work in, and Tony, you know this, Kimberly, you know as well. I used to work in an indigent care clinic down in probably one of the worst parts of Columbus. And the amazing thing is, no matter how young these little girls would come in pregnant, they never wanted to give those babies up. I'd talk to them about adoption, and it was like I was talking about them setting their hair on fire, you know, and they were like, forget it. There is no way that somebody else is going to raise my child. So when did we walk through the looking glass and all these people get $40,000, whisked in front of them, and all of a sudden they say, you know what? Yeah, I can give up this child. Absolutely. No problem.
I don't know.
Right. Well, I wonder about that. We're overlooking the relationship between the mother and the child. And that's something we've begun to look at the body as a machine more and more.
Paul VI.
And this obviously is the woman becomes an incubator and she's just merely housing this child, giving it a space to grow. And then that's how she's viewed. She's just viewed as a machine.
Right.
And I think if we step back a little bit and look at that relationship between the mother and child, we see that even biologically, even if she is and the language we use, gestational carrier, she's just a gestational carrier.
Right.
She's a surrogate. We try to remove her from the situation. She is not considered the mother. So we have to think about the meaning of motherhood, the meaning of the body, the meaning of that relationship between the mother and the child.
You're a moral theologian, so you have to.
Right.
Absolutely. These are the things that I think are so critical. And we were Tony and I were talking before the show about the fact that a mother will carry a piece of her child inside of her. Like there is this, and do you want to discuss the science of that? The fact that how the child and the mother are biologically connected, even if it's not the mother's egg.
Yeah, well, you know, the placenta, the baby, they know now little cells from that placenta circulate within the mother's circulatory system. It can wind up in her tissues. It's been found in the brain. It's been found. And because of this, we have brand new technology called NIPT, whereby a pregnant woman can now have a sample of her blood drawn, and it can be tested for the gender of the baby and genetic abnormalities. And that's
right.
Because they're looking at the baby cells within the mother's circulation.
Yeah.
And that doesn't matter whether the baby's her baby or somebody else's baby that baby's still going to be in there in that thing. And we know that they don't know if it stays forever, but they know it stays for a very long time.
Yeah.
So that biological reality really points to the truth here of that relationship that we try to deny.
Right.
The fact that the mother and the child are intimately bonded and that this is not just this has become a contractual agreement. It's become a matter of will, the relationship. Yeah. Who is the mother? This becomes the big question.
Well, the mother is by whatever the contract says is the mother.
That's right, the intention.
So we've now gone from biological to legal. You know what I mean? I mean, like I could become a little more intimately involved in the last 24 hours with California.
Yes.
And I can tell you, this is the scary part. The law in California is you can now terminate the rights of a surrogate before she even gets birth.
Wow. Wow.
So it's not only that when you give birth, she has to sign the forms and give it over. They can do it while she's pregnant.
Oh, my gosh.
And you're saying and force her to have an abortion.
They're going to force her. You can never really force it. That's battery. You really can't ever force a woman to have abortion. Okay. But my point is, no. I'm talking when the baby's born, there are no questions.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That baby has been stamped with whoever owns that baby before the baby's ever born.
You know, Tony, this is such a fascinating topic, and it has so many fingers and so many layers to it. I mean, it's just unbelievable that we've gotten to a point where this is where we are. We're walking through the looking glass. We are really now able to, you want a child, you want a Coach purse. It's basically a similar sort of thing, and I just find this so fascinating that we are looking at this from a completely a moral neutral position. I just can't even. And as a Catholic, what do we say to this? I mean, obviously, this is nothing we can abide by. We can't allow for our daughters to do this, our sons to be sperm donors, and all these sorts of things. These are space age things that we cannot abide by. So, anyway, I have to thank Kimberly. Dr. Hinkle for coming in for the Catholic Doctor Show. Dr. Tony Caruso, as always, you're wonderful. You've been listening to the Catholic Doctor Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. For this week, without Dr. Michael Parker, we hope your week is happy, healthy, and holy. God bless.
The Catholic Doctors is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of the Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek are available at stgabrielradio.com.